Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's American Brewing Company 2015 full year results. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded, and it is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Julie Anderson, Head of Investor Relations for American Brewing. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for joining American Brewing Company, Inc.'s full year results ending December 31, 2015 investor conference call. On today's call, we will have Brent Willis, Chief Executive Officer of American Brewing Company, and Lanny Lang, Chief Financial Officer. On our call, Brent will provide some opening comments. Lanny will provide an overview of our 2015 results and then turn back to Brent, who will discuss our strategic priorities, the major factors impacting our business, and our business model for 2016. We will then open the call to questions. We remind you that this conference call contains certain forward-looking statements reflecting management's current expectations regarding future results of operations, economic performance, financial condition, and achievements of the company. Forward-looking statements, specifically those concerning future performance, are subject to certain risks and uncertainties. The transcript of today's conference call will be available on the company's new website within the investor section at www.mybucha.com. I'd now like to turn the call over to Brent.
A quick thanks to everyone participating on the call, the first ever investor call for American Brewing. As previously announced, I was asked to join the board of directors of the company and to take on the interim chief executive officer role, and last week I decided to do so. Why? Well, I did my due diligence and had others do some for me too, and my conclusion was that this is a massive opportunity. I never do anything small, and we used to have a saying at AB InBev that it is as much work to do something as it is to do something huge, so you might as well go big. No one on the planet believed we could take a small little Belgian brewer that no one had ever even heard of and make it into the world's largest, but we did, against some pretty decent competitors. This opportunity with Bucha Live Kombucha won't go from $2 billion in revenue to $100 billion like InBev, but there is no question in my mind that this brand, in this category, in this moment or window of opportunity, is an absolute winner. An absolute winner. No question. In anything I get involved in, I look at three sources of risk. I keep it simple, and it's worked pretty well for me. I look at number one, demand risk, number two, technology risk, and number three, execution risk. First, from a demand risk standpoint with Bucha, we have great category growth and relatively weak competition. There is a great built-in source of revenue to draw from with one competitor alone that is $400 million in revenue. We just want our fair share of this, which we frankly define as, well, all of it. Second risk, technology. Here, we are the disruptive tech, both versus the rest of the traditional beverage industry with a healthy functional beverage, but also versus all other kombuchas in the sector with our proprietary production process that is a real competitive advantage. And the final risk to look at is execution risk. We define this as having the people, the processes, the systems, the information, and culture that leads to superior performance. Here in my assessment, honestly, we have a long way to go. It is all about execution, but this is what we know how to do. It sounds mundane, but in the beverage business, this is what it is all about. And with Bucha, it is not a question of if, it's just a question of when or how long it will take to achieve our goals. But when we do, well, the wealth creation opportunity for everybody will be, in a word, worthy and potentially even noteworthy. Now, before we get into how we're going to achieve success and some of the keys to it, including how we will build the Bucha brand, I'd like to ask Lanny Lang, who is our acting chief financial officer that comes via the Aventis Advisory Group, to review last year's financial history and full year results. Lanny?
Thanks, Brent, and welcome aboard. And I do look forward to crushing it with you. I believe we have an excellent foundation on which to build. There is a lot here, and there has been a tremendous amount of cleanup over the last year, and I have been working on the financials, supporting that transformation for the past year. Let me now take you into the details of the 2015 financial results, but let me first caution you. The results are 9 months of operation under American Breweries leadership, plus 3 months under B&R, the previous owners. That combination for 2015 have been compared to the 12 months of financials under B&R in the prior year. This is very confusing, but it is an accounting requirement of the SEC to view the financial results this way. With that being said, on a full year basis, ending December 31, 2015, revenue achieved $2.42 million versus $2.78 million in the prior 12-month period ending December 31, 2014, representing a decrease of 13.1%. More than 100% of this decrease was related to two factors. First, was the company's decision to exit one major account that was unprofitable at the time of the acquisition. Second, in our transition from the previous ownership, other accounts were also compromised. In combination, these two impacts totaled more than $950,000. So on an apples-to-apples basis, although this is non-GAAP measure, sales would have been up more than 30%, excluding those impacts. And we expect to recover those accounts going forward. From a gross profit standpoint, costs of goods sold were in line with last year, up 1.5%, with the exception of depreciation and amortization of customer relationships. Including those impacts, cost of goods sold increased 5% versus the prior year. Overall, our gross margin for the year was 17.1% versus 31.5% in the prior year. This impact is due to a change in accounting treatment for freight, labor, and certain promotional expenses versus how the previous ownership accounted for these line items. Independent of the accounting treatment, however, the gross margin for either 2014 or 2015 represents a significant opportunity for improvement. That's our corporate code for it's terrible historically, but a tremendous opportunity going forward at the same time. A full cost accounting review of every single input into cost of goods sold and shipping and the supply chain is underway, in addition to a review of every supply arrangement and cost input into the company's products. Stay tuned, as I get the sense there is a new dog on this bone. Moving on to operating expenses. They were down 24% versus the prior year. Great result, right? Wrong. This is because G&A expenses were actually up over 103%, or more than $630,000. And what got cut was sales and marketing. That hurts the brand and the long-term intangible franchise value. In fairness, there was an ownership transition integration and other one-time expenses. In addition, $320,000 of G&A expenses were non-cash, stemming from the accounting treatment for equity awards. Notwithstanding the OPEX opportunity in the next area of overhaul, and we will be addressing. At the bottom line, in operating income, The company lost $972,700 on a full year basis versus a loss of $891,400 in the prior year, an increase of 9.1%. From a balance sheet standpoint, assets are essentially in line with liabilities, with current liabilities down a significant 52% versus the prior year. That's a reduction of more than $619,000. So in summary, looking at the financial performance for 2015, it is difficult to draw definitive conclusions given that, one, this was a year of acquisition and integration of the business. Two, this was a year that also included the sale of the brewery assets. And three, there were multiple moving parts in the integration and multiple challenges in maintaining sales and customers just before the business was acquired. With those caveats, a few things are inarguably that we believe are fair takeaways. First, there is real sales momentum in the business in existing accounts. We believe north of 30%. We had a few casualties in the transition, but we expect to regain them because our brand sells and sells well in a fast-growing category. Second, our cost of goods sold and gross margin is completely unacceptable. A wholesale bottom-up cost accounting of every input is already underway, mandated by the new leadership, and this is just in the first week on the job. Third, our balance sheet looks substantially better with significantly reduced debt on the positive side of the ledger, but operating expenses are not being well controlled. Fixable? Absolutely. But it will take fiscal and operating expense discipline, detailed work on the aspects of costs. How will we do that is exactly why we have a new CEO and leader with a track record of discipline and taking on difficult challenges. With that, I'd like to pass it back to Brent to discuss our forward going plans. Brent?
Thanks, Lanny, and I appreciate everything you're doing. Great job, and thank you for all the support on the business. Look, here's how I read the 10-K. Underlying positive momentum with customers and top-line growth, which is a real determinant of health, and it looks okay. But we are only in roughly 1,500 stores or outlets last year, and driving this is Beverage Industry 101 Basics, and has the highest return on investment of any activity. The next germane point from the 10-K is the gross margin and COGS, as Lanny mentioned, although it's the same as most of our competitors, is, in a word, abysmal. We will fix it, and it will take some heavy lifting, but we will get these things done. In balance, I do give tremendous credit to the leadership over the past year, especially Chuck Santry, who's done a great job, and Neil Fallon in the transition in integrating the business, cleaning it up, getting rid of any lingering issues, and paying down the debt, on which they did a great job. Because now there's such a solid foundation, it provides a springboard to accelerate the Bucha Live Kombucha brand, and we are experienced hands at doing this. It's not really that hard, but it does take focus and discipline and unrelenting tenacity. Fortunately, all tenets of our approach to driving business. So let's talk about that approach, what we're going to do, and from that, how can you create a financial model on which to determine earnings expectations going forward for the enterprise? So first off, what are we working with? What do we have to build on? Well, I'm happy to report that we have three sources of fundamental competitive advantage. Number one, we have a preferred flavor with Bucha. In recent independent quantitative research, Bucha was ranked as superior in taste versus competition, with a top two box score, preferred or strongly preferred, of 76%, or 43% above competition. Why such a significant difference in preference for Bucha? Well, I personally believe that most of the kombucha competitors have a very, acquired taste. It's quite acidic and vinegary in finish, which frankly is appealing to a subset of consumers. But what the research tells us, though, is that consumers prefer the mainstream appealing flavor and balance of Bucha. It still has the fermented tea notes and kombucha brewed flavor of the category, but because of our proprietary production process, unique in the industry, we end up with an elegant, complex, refreshing, and clean, really beautiful product. And this brings us to our next competitive advantage, number two, our unique production process that leads to a couple of outcomes. A, Bucha ends up being the most consistent quality product in the category. B, we have the longest shelf life with 9 months versus many competitors at 90 days. Let me repeat that. 9 months of shelf life versus 90 days for the other guys. Implication? Well, it means it's easier for the retailer, distributor, shipper, everyone, by an incalculable margin. Bucha is the only competitor that essentially has a functional or workable supply chain for major beverage national distribution systems or future partners, and see that production process also, beyond a shadow of a doubt, eliminates the risk of secondary fermentation. So as an end result, there's no risk of increase in alcohol levels above the FDA trace limitations. And finally, it's that production process that leads to elimination of this nasty vinegar aftertaste associated with most kombuchas. Of course, we have our secret formulas and unique ingredients that we keep locked up, but it's our proprietary process that gives us an enormous strength versus competitors in flavor profile, quality consistency, and shelf life. And finally, our third competitive advantage on which to build is that we are actually significantly outselling competition on an apples-to-apples basis in sales per point of distribution. A review of IRI and specific consumer data across key accounts over the past 52 weeks indicates that sales of Bucha Live Kombucha brand significantly outpacing competitors. And this is despite a lack of promotional support, poor shelf placement, virtually no marketing, and the transition pains that the company experienced over the past year. So this is what I uncovered when I did my due diligence on the firm and why I became involved. It's awesome. I have to tell you, I can't believe how lucky, all of the shareholders of American Brewing are to have this asset at this value. You had one of more than 4,200 craft breweries with limited scale and limited potential, and now you have Bucha in an incredibly undervalued moment. I know how fortunate we are with this business because I've taken on some tough challenges before, and from my vantage point, with my experience in the beverage industry, it just does not get much better. So that's where we are, and sometimes, frankly, it is okay to be a little bit lucky. And anyone that is an investor right now or in the near future ought to count themselves just that. So now, what are we going to do with it? How are we going to financially improve it? And how can we all collectively model it? So here's the plan, and we are only going to do three things. But we are going to do them better than anybody else on the planet. Number one, we're going to expand distribution in both depth and breadth. Last year, Bucha was in close to 1,500, that's it, food, mass, and specialty outlets. And in the beverage industry, your highest ROI driver is distribution. So far this year, we have already added distribution in Shaw's in the Northeast and Jewel in the Midwest to go with previous distribution in Kroger, Safeway, Whole Foods, Ralph's, Vons, and others. So we have just eclipsed almost 2,000 stores. But we are still only in 2,000 stores, not 20,000, not 200,000. So we have a big upside in front of us. And over the next 30 days, I will personally be in front of customers representing more than 5,000 new outlets. So this is the first part of the model. And I would say a good current input should be around $2,000 in revenue for us per store per year for every new point of distribution. So you can take the total number of existing and new outlets, and then you can take an additional multiplier by driving more distribution depth. What I mean by this is that we're only doing $2,000 in net revenue per individual store. But this is done with poor relative shelf space, limited in-store promotions, no point of sale, no marketing. And winning at the point of sale also has a significant ROI relative to other investments. And we can expect to increase the shelf throughput this year, increasing our revenue per outlet multiplier. So the next thing we're going to do, and the next part of the financial model, is to improve our cost of goods sold, as Lanny mentioned, gross margin and supply chain costs. We're going to do this concurrently with our first strategy of expanding distribution. We've already started the cost accounting light item review of every input, glass, cardboard, production, warehousing, shipping, teas, fruits, and every ingredient and production process to re-architect our supply chain and significantly improve margin. Today, we have one outsourced manufacturer in one location in Southern California, and then we ship We import glass bottles in, and then we ship finished, good, heavy, filled glass bottles out from there to across the country, refrigerated, by the way. And in the future, we will have multiple production points, and our distribution of finished goods will be closer to, I would say, kind of like the last 30 miles versus today, that's more like the first 3,000. And all these actions will have a very positive effect on our gross margin. Also, we're going to run a tight ship in OPEX. Financial model-wise, G&A can be expected to decline every single year as a percentage of sales. And I expect G&A to go from 44% of net sales in 2005 to at least 15% of net sales over time. But also within operating expenses, last year we spent about 10% of net sales in advertising, promotion, and selling. And I would expect that number to run closer to 20% of net sales over time. But in that statement is a very important distinction that spending towards investing in the business and the brand will be variable. There will be no, and I mean no, aggressive forward spend on marketing. It is stupid, in a word, to advertise to empty shelves, and that is why driving distribution is our first strategy. Then, as new accounts come in and revenue accrues from those accounts, we will intelligently spend back as a percent of sales to drive consumer offtake and sales per point of distribution. So in summary, from a business model, one can expect top-line growth in line with that of the category, plus incremental top-line growth coming from distribution breadth and depth improvement. Second, a fundamental change in gross margin. And third, OPEX control, with G&A running at less than half of historical levels and with sales and marketing running at about 20% of net sales over time. The last thing I'm going to discuss on the call today is our plans to build the Bucha brand. And you can bet your bucha we are going to do it. Why? Well, to gain retail distribution, frankly, retailers require it. So there's no choice. There is no choice. One goes hand in hand with the other. We also have to build the Bucha brand because in the ultimate analysis of value for our company, the Bucha brand will be our most valuable intangible asset. I had a shareholder ask me last week, well, what about all the dilution you're going to cause me with a multi-million-dollar marketing campaign? The right question should have been, how can you invest more in marketing to build the Bucha brand to be the market leader faster. That's where the money and valuation is and desire from major potential distribution partners. The second reason why we all want more spent in marketing is that the variable spending principle that I talked about. It means that if we're spending more in marketing, by default, we are growing the top line more and only spending back out of cash flow after we earn it. Look, even if we had more investment or free cash, which we don't, by the way, to invest in marketing, I just wouldn't do it. I'd invest in broadening distribution. That being said, if anybody on the call would like a t-shirt that says Bucha Mama or Bucha Daddy on it so you can represent and be part of our marketing campaign, we will be happy to send you one, but feel free to send in $20 plus at least $10 in shipping and handling for it along the way. So what are we going to invest in, aside from t-shirts, that you're going to pay for? Well, what is great about this category and this brand is that it is very social media-centric. This is not a brand for TV, print, promotion, or other traditional and expensive marketing mediums. On the contrary, we would argue that those mediums are absolutely wrong for this brand. This is a quirky, all-natural, 100% certified organic, California, dare I say, tree-hugger, healthy brand with 1 billion live microorganisms inside every serving. As such, the mediums that tap into people's social graphs to build the tribe and followings amongst that group can be done significantly more cost-effectively. One of the keys here is to build core brand advocates, measured by Facebook likes, number of Twitter followers, and those types of targeted media. Here, we call our brand advocates Buchadors, and we want to build an army of these fanatics, tapping into the kind of Maslowian belongingness needs of this target audience. It is our core Buchadors that will be the tipping point opinion leaders from which to concentrically build out. And consistent with that notion of building our tribe, we need an inclusionary rallying cry. And our call to action will be built around the proposition to all consumers to come Bucha with us, an invitation to become a fellow Buchador or Buchadora, to become part of the tribe, the in crowd that is committed to all things natural, all things good for the environment, for their fellow Buchadors, and for themselves. It's an inclusionary message, and you can bet your Bucha we're going to have some fun with it. This is a group that craves content. So the content will be, frankly, claim and rename as the authority on good and good for you, and what's good and good for you, on anything related to healthy and healthy lifestyle, especially as it relates to any beverage that we choose to put into our bodies. And the final component of marketing I want to talk about that we're going to invest in is continual new news with new and exciting on-trend flavors. Consumers love trying new things, and they do especially in this category. So this year we were rolling out three new flavors to complement our existing lineup, including lemon lime ginger, tropical honey blossom ginger, and elderflower green tea. They are so unbelievably good, they ought to be illegal. Everyone seems to love them, and they were a huge hit and highlight at the recent National Foods Expo that I participated in, and Bucha was a star in. The elderflower product is only 47 calories, is beautifully balanced with a blend of organic black tea, organic green tea, organic kombucha, and elderflower. It's a crisp, clean, almost summer kind of beverage, and refreshing and aerobically brewed according to our secret formula. It takes, frankly, almost 30 days. So that's what we're going to do in marketing. But in closing, I would say that, look, this opportunity is fantastic. I am really energized and excited to be part of it. It may not be as big as some of the other things that I've worked on in the past, But it will be, and it will be a very fun journey along the way. We have a fast-growing category. It is just getting started. The category is a disruptor versus other beverage types. And Bucha, our business that we all own, is a disruptor within the category. Execution-wise, it's not complicated. Hard work, but not complicated. We have something no one else has. Our sources of competitive advantage in preferred flavor, in production process, in quality and shelf life, and in the fact that we are outselling competition on the shelf. These are foundations on which you can really build a really big business and a tribe of fanatic buchadores and buchadoras, inviting others to become part of our healthy, organic, and natural movement. Thank you, and we encourage you all to kombucha with us. And with that, if I could turn it back to the moderator and open up for any questions and answers you might have.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question today, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll take our first question from John Harrell with Harrell & Associates. Your line is open.
Good morning, and welcome aboard, Brent. I read in the 10-K where it looks as if you're going to expand your manufacturing / bottling from not only the West Coast, but now to include the East Coast as well. Any idea what this does for your gross margins, and do you already have a third-party manufacturer in mind? And then I have a follow-up.
It's a great question, and it is one of our major priorities. As both Lan and I pointed out on the call, and I guess you read in the 10-K, we do have some targets that we have already been in conversations with, but I would say I haven't yet personally participated in those conversations and their early days. So in truth, I don't know how long it's going to take us to find those new partners and to finalize the arrangements with those new partners that will have a significant effect on the shipping and frankly, reduced overall outsourced manufacturing costs. But as you look at kind of our kit that we can add into anybody else's plant, it's really not that expensive that we can put as an add-on to a juice or a brewery or even a regular beverage plant. As long as they have the tanks and the other things there. So it's a nice, easy, non-big space add-on that we can do. And it's really critical for us because to ship products from California to New York and Boston and everywhere in between is just not how you do it in the beverage industry. So by doing that and shipping products the last 10 meters is really what we're going to do. And that will have the significant impact on shipping and the production cost. And frankly, with how we make our products, you know, for me, ultimately, there's no reason why we can't go global and to hit the targets that I'd like to hit for the company, ultimately, we'll both go down the street from a distribution standpoint and global to complement the change in the manufacturing footprint. Do you want to hit the second part of your question?
Sure. Thanks for that first answer. Listen, when I saw the 8K filed a week or two ago announcing your hiring, I immediately did some research, and I discovered, I believe, if I'm correct, that you were actually one of the creators of InBev. In other words, it was your idea. And so when we look at a company like InBev, which is multi-billion dollar company in sales, and here you're coming into a company with a market cap of $6 million, it's almost comical at first glance, but obviously you see something here that you feel like, you know, sales will explode. And do you already have an exit strategy? Have you thought about that? What the possibilities are here? I know that you're looking at targeting, I believe, GTs that has the $400 million in sales, but this is, it's just so uncanny to see somebody move from where you've come from into a situation like this. So I'd love to hear you expand on that just a little bit.
I think it's a tough question, John, and I want to be cautious. But the first thing that I'd say is look, in anybody's career, success has a lot of friends and a lot of people that take credit for it, and failure has few. And even though, yes, I was a very integral part of building InBev, and I led the writing of the strategy and the development of the business plans and the execution, there was just a fantastic organization and team that we built there, and we just did it faster and better than anybody else in the world. So there were lots of people that contributed to it. I was a key architect in it, but there were lots of great people that participated. And that's one of the keys here, is we're going to continue to build out our team and our organization and our processes and systems to replicate a lot of the things that these big companies do that leads to their success. So that's the first thing that I'd say. The second thing that I'd say is, I came to this opportunity because I do think it can be huge, and I do think in OTC markets, it's inefficient, and you could find these kinds of gems, and I do see this as one of those. But I also, I don't believe in smoking hopium. And what I mean by that is to sell out or to have an exit plan is just that. It's just hope. It is not a business strategy. So I look at this in a couple milestones. There's a first milestone of, when we get to 10 million, and then there's another milestone beyond that, and certain things that we have to do to get to each one of those phases. And yes, we have a plan, but it's first a very pragmatic, mundane, blocking and tackling execution plan. And that leads to basically us having a good company that our investors can be proud of, that continually grows top line and profitable bottom line growth. Our first target from an exit standpoint is allow shareholders to cash flow the heck out of this thing and enjoy the growth and benefit of the stock. Now, I would say also, this would be a very good strategic fit for a major strategic, either from a distribution partnership standpoint or an acquisition standpoint at the right time. I think we're maybe too small to be on their radar screen right now, but we won't be forever. And I know a lot of these guys, and they're my friends, I'm here because this is a great opportunity for shareholders. It's an untapped opportunity. It's something very fun to do, to win and grow something huge that all of us can be proud of and will be something that, we're bringing a good, healthy, beneficial product to consumers that is a great choice versus a lot of other alternatives out there. And I feel really good about that. And I feel really good about our prospects. But the last thing I'm thinking about right now is exit. The only thing I'm thinking about right now is execution. So great questions, John. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions from anybody else?
Yes, we'll go next to Nick Rogopoulos from Alpine Equity. Your line is open.
Brent, how are you?
Hi, Nick.
Can you just address the balance sheet a little bit and cash and capital going forward and what your plans are there?
And I might ask Lanny to pop in. So, what the leadership team did a great job of is significantly reducing the debt on the business. And, it was a really hard choice for Neil Fallon and the leadership team to sell their baby that they'd been building up for 5 or 6 years. You guys have to appreciate, I think, how emotional a decision that is. But to do it in the best interest of the shareholders, I give the guys a lot of credit because they see and saw the opportunity in Bucha versus the limitations there. So from a balance sheet standpoint, paying down the debt was a great first move. As Lanny said, I also see liabilities kind of in line with assets on a current basis, but there really is not a lot of cash to drive the business. We are just at the precipice of being cash flow positive, but on an operating basis, but really not there yet. But we're talking in the 10 to 20, maybe 30,000 worst case a month kind of implications, and it won't be long till we get there. It's all about driving scale in the business. There was a small investment put into the firm of roughly $200,000. We could frankly use another $1 million to have powder dry to drive the business and get to that cash flow break even and the next threshold that I talked about. There are a number of people that are considering that, and that would really help in the business. And I think that $1 million of investment will really get us to that next very profitable threshold and cash flow positive with any cash flow constraints really in our rearview mirror. Beyond that, frankly, once you get to the right scale in the beverage business, it should be a cash generation machine. And we're not that far from that. So balance sheet-wise, I do not expect to invest in any capital. I don't really believe in it anyway. So I believe in driving EVA, which I define as simply ROIC over WACC. And to drive ROIC over WACC, just don't invest in capital. So we don't need to because there's enough existing installed production and distribution capacity in this industry that we don't have to do it ourselves. So we can just focus on winning with our brand, winning with our customers, and driving consumer offtake. But I expect going forward that we'll have the cash that is generated from the business to do that. And, you know, if we really want to get to a much bigger threshold, once the stock is much more valuable and we're at a different stage, the cost of money at that time will be substantially less, in my view.
Great.
Does that answer your question, Nick?
Yes, thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you.
And we have a question from Michael McGaughy, a private investor. Your line is open.
Yeah, my question is a little bit like the first gentleman's question. I just kind of, I know one thing that you mentioned earlier in the phone call was that I think you said you referred to yourself as the interim CEO and the CFO is the interim CFO. Is that the case? And then secondly, also, kind of, what do you get out of this? I mean, what's your ownership of the company like, and what are the, do you have a lot of options coming your way? If you're going to tell me something that's already in the quarterly report, I can go back and look at that. I haven't had a chance to read that yet.
Yeah, good questions, Mike. Thank you. And these are questions about me and Lanny. And the thing that I want to say is, look, guys, the success of this company is not about me. What we have here is a great brand. What we have here is a proprietary and unique production process that gives us real competitive advantages, and those brands are, and our brand is actually outperforming competition. That is the real hero here, and any Cro-Magnon operator like myself and Chuck Santry, our COO, and the rest of the team can connect those cores and those strengths with consumers and retailers, and we're doing it. So this is about that. So yes, I'm interim CEO because, you know, who knows, 6 months now from now, 12 months from now, 18 months from now, we may find somebody better and younger and to take on the role that wants to do it. So it doesn't really mean anything, and we may drop it, we may keep it. I honestly, Mike, I don't know. And from an ownership standpoint or what's coming my way, I don't know, but I promise you that whatever we do, it will be in shareholders' best interests, where all of our shareholders will substantially benefit from the growth in the equity and their ownership of the business. But you know, as a public company, you are required to do things that are in our investors' fiduciary best interests, and we will operate that way. And you know, we're going to improve the governance of the firm too, with a majority of independent directors, with a governance committee, an audit committee, and a compensation committee that historically haven't been there, because ultimately we want to take this business to a different, more senior exchange. It'll take us a little bit of time to get there, but that is the plan, and we're just not going to look back, and I hope to be a part of it as long as I'm contributing and adding value. Thanks, Mike. Any other questions?
And we have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back to our presenters for any closing remarks today.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for participating on the call. We're here. We're available. We are accessible, and we're excited about the business, and we look forward to building it together with everybody, and we want everybody to kombucha with us and be part of our tribe and be a fellow buchador. Thank you very much. Talk to everybody soon. Bye.